everybody. Welcome to another edition of the podcast. We're still down here in Atlanta, and I have the distinct pleasure to be here with Nick McGuire, CEO of Gemma and former analyst at mobile analyst, really, at IDC. And Nick, introduce yourself.
Well, fantastic. Thank you. Thank you, Brian. Good to be here. This is my first mobile podcast. This is a truly great experience with this microphone in front of me. I feel really, really, really cool. So I'm the CEO of the Global Enterprise Mobility Alliance, which is an independent joint venture made up of leading local managed mobility specialists from across the world that are getting together on a common platform to sell to multinationals managed mobility services. So, and to Brian's point, yeah, I formerly led enterprise mobility research for IDC based in London, UK. So it's an absolute distinct pleasure to be here, Brian.
So, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about Gemma and all that, but before we do that, you know, I want to hit a little bit on your analyst roots. So you did that for, what, 10 years or so?
Yeah, well, I did a couple stints. I started at Yankee and then went work for BT Global Services for a number of years and then came back to IDC. So I think in aggregate it was about, 10 years.
So you have a lot of experience in the industry, and we're going through some really turbulent changes now.
Tell me about it.
So, you know, if you look at it, you know, when you left, BlackBerry was still at least alive. Microsoft wasn't so much alive. You had Apple, Samsung was really just, you know, coming up and doing their thing. And, you know, nowadays we see Apple and Samsung at the forefront. You know, we have iOS and Android, and we got Microsoft, you know, just bought Nokia. And, you know, they've pulled into third above BlackBerry here as far as, you know, current selling, not total devices yet. And we have BlackBerry claiming an auction. I mean, what's it look like to you? You know, now you've moved out of the analyst, but, you know, it's still in there. I know it.
Yeah, you know, it's still deep in the heart. I miss it already. I mean, it was May 1 that I started at Gemma. So it's still lingering. How I look at it, it's incredible, isn't it? I mean, one of the advantages actually of being in the UK is you get a slight different vantage point, right? Because of the way in which you look, you know. And I mean, obviously at Gemma as well, we're in the multinational space, so we've got representation from a lot of the regions of the world where you've got a slightly different story going on around a lot of these different vendors, right? And so you roll that up, it's still a really difficult, when you net all that out, it's still really difficult to kind of get an overall picture. But I think with respect to BlackBerry in particular, I think, you know, what I think is fascinating is when you can look at the corners of the world where BlackBerry operate, right? I mean, and obviously it's always been really difficult here for, you know, the past number of years. It's getting harder here. But you look at the place like the Middle East, right? And they're still doing really well there. I mean, enterprises are still heavily BlackBerry.
Yeah, but you're also from the UK. In UK, BlackBerry is huge with kids, with, you know, teens and everything else. Is it going to stay? Is it staying that way? I mean,
it's a good question, because, you know, I would say 2 years ago, yes, I think you're starting to see changes. You really are. I mean, it's not as, I suppose, Google and Apple centric as it is here. You know, you still get a lot of the older BlackBerry models, the Curves, these sort of things on, you know, very cheap data plans, you know, frankly. And you see the kids running with them. They're prepay as well. And, you know, you go on the buses and you see the BBMs flying. And, that was always very common, you know, in London in particular. Now, that is slightly starting to change already. It's amazing how quickly it changes at that level, you know, in the marketplace. But at the same time, it's still a little bit different, right? And then you go into places into Asia Pacific as well, and it's
BlackBerry is huge.
Completely different scenario. So how this balances out is the real question, right? And how the success, you know, there was a company that I think we had this conversation last night over a few beers, but my memory's hazy now.
You said you didn't want to talk about last night.
Well, I got abuse from you last night, so I'm raising it now just so that I can defend myself. But there was one company I was speaking to last year, One company I was speaking to last year had 200,000 BlackBerries in its fleet still. So there are companies out there with a big, still big dependency.
Hey, it's interesting. I was talking to someone who was here at the conference, and they're a major firm, which we also talked about last night, but I won't say their name because I didn't ask them before I said this information, but they have over 20,000 BlackBerries.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, we're not going up anymore. You know, we used to be going up unbelievably fast. And I'm sorry, 200,000 BlackBerries. We may even be the same company. So we used to be going up really, really fast, and now we're seeing them fall.
Yeah.
Now, they're not falling at 1,000 at a time or anything, but, you know, he said, we're falling 100 to 200 a month, and, you know, it's accelerating.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's where it starts to become interesting. But what I, you know, one of the things, you know, having you here, which would be kind of neat, in the U.S., and a lot, you know, we have listeners in the U.S., but we have listeners all over the world, and one of the things that people in the U.S. probably don't get is there aren't subsidies in a lot of countries outside the U.S., and, you know, that's something you're much more familiar with and can probably speak to about how they kind of sell phones outside of the U.S.
That's it. Absolutely. I mean, and you got to look at the total picture. I mean, it's in certain markets, the lack of subsidies, so obviously price points on the hardware are very important. But it's the data plans as well, right? And you know, you talk to some of these organizations where they got employees spread all over the world. I mean, 30, 40, 50 countries, you know. You know, tens of thousands of employees in, you know, these multiple countries. And you're looking at your options, right? You've got your BEVS infrastructure already in place. You've made that investment, you know, years ago. But, you know, your employees are moving around. And what you know, when you think about also the engagement that these companies have had with their carriers over that period of time only on BlackBerry, imagine those conversations of, you know, every 2 years or a year, those data plans are renewed and those BlackBerries are renewed by the carrier. And each year they get beaten down to the point where they're actually really cheap. They're really cheap and they're really predictive. You know, it's like fixed line. You know, and so I think when you got these companies that have got these number of BlackBerries still in the fleet, that there's a reason for that, right? Because they are, you know, they are cheap. So
we see it. You know, I've seen companies, and I won't say names, but certainly in Asia and other places where, you know, they may be all iOS in other spots or iOS and Android, and they get to Asia, and it's a matter of the BlackBerries are so much cheaper, and, you know, these guys have a fixed budget. So say you have to go this, and they turn around and say, great, but we can only outfit half our workforce.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, we're going to stick with BlackBerry. And, you know, so let's keep going with BlackBerry then, and we'll get back to subsidies in a bit. BlackBerry said they want to have this auction by November. And, you know, I look at them and I see really two businesses. Some people say three. You know, I see the BEZ business. And then I see their handset and their OS business.
Right.
And
as one, basically.
As one basis. So, yeah, the handset OS is one business.
Yeah.
You know, that I can see. You know, we talked about this last night. You know, and I said, who would buy these two businesses? And on the, you know, for me in the conversation we had, and there are a couple other people with us, I think we settled that the handset OS business might actually go really well with Amazon, just for the fact that they've had some issues with finding people to make a device for them.
Right.
But where do you see their handset? You know, who else do you see out there for that?
That's a tricky one, isn't it? I mean, the immediate thought is a lot of the Asian PC manufacturers are trying to get into mobile, right? That's where people start. But then that gets complicated because some of them, you know, you think about the Canadian government, the owner restriction and the restrictions there of foreign ownership into Canada in certain geographies of Asia Pac, and does that slow a deal down? Who knows? You can only speculate on that. But that's clearly one path that people think is a viable option. But there aren't that many options there. You know, who are you thinking of? You're thinking of Lenovo's in the press. I mean, some of these others. So I don't. That's one route. I'm not sure. You know, do you then say, okay, what's the valuable asset there? I mean, clearly it's the OS, right? So therefore, where does the OS take you? And if the OS takes you into the pervasive computing, you're getting into other, you know, other industries, automotive, with Internet of Things, whatever that be. I mean, obviously, QNX has got a heritage in other verticals as well that could be exploited. I think that piece is really attractive. It's the kind of hardware manufacturing facilities that BlackBerry have, or the way in which they do the manufacturing, that there will be an asset base there that will need to be, you know, either someone will want it and roll it up into the OS, or they'll actually want it carved off. Who knows? You can speculate. But I agree with you. I think there's two real debating points around, okay, if BlackBerry is going to be bought and who's looking at BlackBerry at the moment. They're going to be looking at those main bits of it. But they're two separate value propositions.
So right? So let's look at the second one. So the second one would be Bez. And, you know, when we talk about Bez, there's the there's the NOC, so the Network Operations Center. So for those that don't know how Bez works, they have their own NOC. You actually send your traffic through BlackBerry's NOC and through the carriers and back, and they can do compression. They do security. That's the piece that the governments and everything else like, because they can keep things, you know, the DoD looks at that, you know, it's protected data. Who looks at that? I mean, you know what my opinion is, but let's, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've got
and there's that, you know, it's the management piece around Bez as well. You know, it's
correct. Yeah,
it is MDM. It's you know, they bought the stuff for Fusion. They have this, and there are a ton of people who need MDM right now that don't have it.
Well, at its baseline, that Bez combined NOC architecture. Okay, I mean, there's the management front end piece of it. Let's put that aside for a moment, because that's a different.
Dialogue.
That's a different dialogue, really. But the underlying architecture and infrastructure for the NOC, that's transport, isn't it? It's secure transport of data. And so who's interested in that? Who would be? Would a carrier be interested in that, that wants to sell the enterprise? Technically speaking, I'm not the engineer. You know, how much can you run through that architecture and that infrastructure and still preserve a really good user experience on mobile? I mean, from my and also, frankly, as well, which is slightly, the opposite, is also the good cost economics of data as well that the NOC infrastructure brings, because of the compression and, you know, the engagement with the carriers and the contracting with the carriers in all these markets as well. So
and that was a point you brought up last night. So I don't want you to just gloss over that. You were talking about the fact that the deals and the rates that they've gone, you know, have driven, you know, BlackBerry and the companies out there have driven the carriers to really closer to a fixed line cost. You know what you're getting with the BlackBerry. You know what your contract is. They've cut down on the data. And, you know, I don't want you to gloss over that, because you said that that's an important piece.
I think for big multinational enterprises that have their Bez infrastructure running, that is a huge important piece. Because the TCO is so much lower. I mean, you compare it to data plans on iOS and Android, right? They're all over the shop. They're carrier specific. They're not enterprise, you know, collected in terms of, you know, aggregate pricing for a multinational across the world. And frankly, the carriers make a lot of money on iOS and Android data, right? Because, you know, obviously they'll make a lot of money on the hardware for iOS, so they want to reap back a lot of the return on the data. And clearly, without compression, it's really, you know, it's expensive for enterprises. It's quite interesting. That's as an aside. You know, starting to interesting to see some of the startups that are coming up in the compression space.
Onavo's
one of them. Wandera's another one. You talk to these guys, and they'll say the fact that the BlackBerry is struggling for us is, you know, a huge driver of our business, because who's doing compression on Android? No one, really. And they need an enterprise-grade solution. Funnily enough, and as an anecdote, when I was in my analyst days, I was down in South Africa, and I was working. I did a presentation at a fairly big CIO event in Africa that was looking at Pan-Africa on behalf of an operator down there. And so there were some really big CIOs down there. One of the Android manufacturers was up there pitching their product to the CIOs. I won't name the name, but... and it was told a good enterprise story, great device, great, you know, great capability, you know, all locked in with MDM solutions, all that sort of good stuff. I'm sure you can guess who it is. But the three questions just propped up right away, all linked. How do you compress the data? can you compress the data? Because the reason why we like BlackBerry is they compress the data. I've got a bill that came back for me. One guy had a bill. His device was stolen. Corporate liable device was stolen in South Africa. Turned up in Nigeria 4 days later. The bill was a million rand, so 120 grand U.S. or something thereabouts. I forget my South African rand to U.S. currency, but it was around that ballpark. And it was because the device was being used as a modem to communicate back to Colombia, because it was some drug cartel thing that caught it. So it's really, really weird stuff, but it was super expensive. So obviously, you know, when you get into these other areas of the world where bandwidth is still at a premium, you know, to compress this data is important solution for enterprises in particular. So anyway, I'm digressing, but coming back, I mean, I think that's still a value, that network architecture.
So
it's still a value to someone. Now the question is who, right?
So who do you think? Or you want me to say what I said last night and you want to rip off that?
I always wonder whether a carrier would be interested in that, right? A carrier that sells mobility, you know, solutions and wants to have some optimal, you know, secure channel for data for enterprises. Okay, that's one piece.
I mean, the issue I see with that one is just the fact that if a single carrier takes it over, do they leave it open to everybody? Do they charge them? Do they, you know, okay, this is ours now. This
exactly.
is our asset.
There's a lot of questions. It's an asset that if you're going after the multinational market, you know, if you can get it, I mean, obviously there's an expense here as well. But I can see that being one possibility. I don't think it's going to happen for obvious reasons. Carriers aren't. So then you think of, okay, who's a solution provider for the enterprise?
Last night we started with this, and you know, I just said I still see BlackBerry as the perfect, you know, the best part as the perfect opportunity for Microsoft. And you know, the first pushback
secure
from
transport.
You know,
for ActiveSync, right?
Yeah,
next generation ActiveSync.
Let's go through the model and then we'll see if it still makes sense. But you know, there's a lot of pushback. Well, they just bought Nokia. It doesn't make sense.
Okay,
why would they want that? And you know, I said, well, let's look at it from a different perspective. Let's leave the handset and OS stuff aside.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't need that. You know, they got Nokia. But they have some opportunities. If they pick up BlackBerry, they can actually say, we now have secure transport for email. You know, in reality, they can deprecate EAS and say, okay, we'll leave EAS for Android and iOS. But if you buy a Windows phone, you buy a Windows Nokia device, so we won't even say Windows phone, Windows Nokia device,
yep,
with our OS,
yep,
you get secure transport, secure email, data compression. You get it on this great device that Nokia makes, and we're going to improve the OS faster and make it, you know, harden a little bit. But we get at least all the BEZ patents and everything that goes with that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we take the knock. So, hey, now we've become a real solution provider. Now we can actually give you soup to nuts. And, you know, to me, that makes sense. I mean, what's your take on that?
I mean, I totally think it makes sense. I mean, and also, it's Microsoft into defense. It's Microsoft into federal. It's in government. It's into local markets. Because, you know, we forget that that knock investment, that architecture, country by country, BlackBerry have had to put some sweat. I mean, into Russia, into India, where you've got legal intercept issues where you just cannot route traffic out of country. It's got to be sitting locally. I mean, this is the challenge you have in the cloud space, right? I mean, a lot of these lighting up data centers and where you put them and making sure that you've got local data residency for regulatory purposes. So, you know, BlackBerry have made those events. They've dealt that pain over the years. You know, with in selling to governments, but also selling in certain corners of the world where it's required. So Microsoft just gets that bang with that acquisition as well. So that's a huge platform for enterprise in particular, for them to go with the assumption, of course, is that so if BlackBerry goes away, who then takes up the mantle of being the, you know, the defense standard for mobile, right? Or the, you know,
and
high-end
security
standard.
And let's be clear, Samsung wants it. There's
sure,
no doubt.
Sure.
Samsung
sure,
knocks.
Sure.
They absolutely
sure,
want to pick
sure,
up that mantle.
Sure, sure. It's taken them a while, hasn't it, to get going on knocks, hasn't it? You mean
it's been almost what is it, 9 months now since they announced it?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
at least 6 months. It may be 9 months, but you know, they're pushing hard on that. You know, and the other piece that occurred to me when we were talking about last night, and I hadn't thought about before when I thought about this, was BlackBerry Messenger is also a neat little add in there, because they have the, you know, they have the iOS and Android clients that are about to come out. They could hook it into their Skype Yammer piece, add 84 million kids, you know, and other people, obviously. But, you know, there's this whole culture of people they can add to this that kind of dovetails into what they do.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you get you get the ability to, I guess, add, you know, a fairly decent, you know, mobile IM capability underlying that, you know, to Microsoft as well, because they've never really, you know, really played in that space as well. So you're right, that comes with it. To me, it's that underlying infrastructure. I think that, to me, that you can, for the enterprise, I think there is certainly a really interesting value proposition there. One of the things that you can also do with that infrastructure is you can run direct MPLS lines into that infrastructure if you're a multinational organization, which allows you to have a direct line in, and you can do some really solid performance management. You could really have a very strong control of the transport as a result,
and which makes organizations look at that again as security,
correct,
you know, performance. Yeah. You know, yeah, they've had their issues, but in reality, you know, it's been up for what, 14 years now, 15 years, 1998. So it's been around a long time.
The one thing I would say, though, just quickly on that, the only thing I'm not 100% sure on, I don't know if you can jump in on this, but it's the user experience. So you compress, and, you know, on one hand, that's great, but on the other hand, the user experience is driven by more and more thick client, so to speak, experience, right? Like heavy pipes, heavy bandwidth, you know, heavy apps, you know, heavy content, video, etc. And I don't know if the two marry, frankly. I don't know if there comes a point. I mean, secure email is great, but, you know, does it come up when you start to say, okay, we're going to run... I mean, I think this was a technically strategic issue that BlackBerry faced when they were going to BB10 was, do we run the consumer experience through Bez, or will the consumer experience through Bez be so undermined in comparison to iOS and Android that it was impossible?
Well, the question is, if you own the infrastructure and you're building your Windows Phone to deal with this, can you actually design the entrance into those pipes so maybe if you're compressing the data, you can have more apps running at the same time? You know, that's one of Microsoft's play, you know, as far as, you know,
right,
being able to do that and actually get more data across smaller pipes. Because as much as we like to say the network's ubiquitous, you know, we're actually in the hotel right now in Atlanta where Verizon doesn't work.
That is such an important point. I can't, when you start to go outside and go, you know, truly, you know, global and go into some, you know, really nascent countries worldwide.
Africa, Asia Pac, some of those places.
And you talk to BlackBerry advocates and enterprise from all over the world, and they'll tell you, you know, the reason why I land in Kuala Lumpur or I land in Delhi and I turn on my BlackBerry and it works. It just starts. And I've tried every other device. I mean, certain devices just aren't allowed, you know, obviously. Or I'm fiddling around with my version of an Android, you know, manufactured device that, that has some sort of carrier settings and carrier customization that I don't obviously recognize in my device because I'm traveling into these geographies, and it's a nightmare. So, you know, you're absolutely right on that. You know, that aspect, if Microsoft can leverage, if this, you know, materializes in your theory. We have to stress this is a theory. Yeah, right?
Definitely, I mean, a theory. I have no inside knowledge whatsoever.
That I think is a huge value prop for Microsoft in a global capacity. Now, also you marry that with Nokia's global branding and distribution and reach and point of sale capabilities externally as well. It actually makes a lot of sense.
And, you know, when you talk about moving from the Asha line of the Nokias that Microsoft has acquired as part of this and talk about moving them to smartphones.
Yeah.
What good is a smartphone in some places in Africa, Asia Pac, or anywhere, you know, where you don't have the data throughput. Okay, great. I have an app on here, but I can't reach the cloud behind it. So if not Microsoft, anybody else you can think of?
Because you know, we had this conversation. I was thinking of, you know, I mean, Dell. Does Dell come in? I mean, then you say, does Dell look holistically? I mean, I would argue, you know, obviously we're completely hypotheticalizing and speculating in this. But, you know, Dell is probably one of the only, if we talk about Dell as a candidate, you know, say we make a top 10 list and they're in there somewhere, Dell would be one of the few that I could see being interested in the whole thing. You know what I mean? Like these other companies that we're speculating on, I think they're going to only be interested in bits of it, right?
Well, it could also be HP, but on the other hand, we've seen how HP handles mobile acquisitions. So I don't know that I'd want them to pick it up if I really wanted to survive.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go down the path of some other options. But I think the Dell scenario, I think that's a little bit tricky. But pretty soon you're getting down to a short list. And I think what that means is I think there aren't that many options out there unless the organization is structured differently. But alternatively, I think truly what's going to happen, in my personal view, is that this is all speculation. I think BlackBerry will still run, and it will run, and maybe it'll have different investor structure, and maybe there'll be strategic changes and bits will change, but it's still going to run, and I think it's going to run for some time. It makes sense for everyone. That's even if there is a potential.
Nobody
buyer.
Buys it; it dies a slow death.
That's right.
But a slow death. You know, and eventually somebody will pick up some of the pieces. I don't think a lot of people say the third business for them, I alluded to when we started is the patent leg. And, you know, I don't really think their patents are there. You know, I think they would have been defending them for a heck of a long time, and they're not. They haven't really gone against anybody for them. And we've seen what's happened with Motorola. Google bought Motorola for their patents and hasn't really won anything with them.
Yeah.
So let's actually talk a little bit. Yeah, we've good conversation about BlackBerry, but let's kind of transition and hit a tangent and actually talk a little bit about Gemma. Because, you know, what's interesting about Gemma and, you know, what you guys do, I work for a multinational. I work for an international company. And as I understand it, and let's kind of dig into what you guys do. You guys are enabling mobility for multinationals from the perspective of you got all these member companies, and I think you're a joint venture. You can explain that in a second.
Sure.
But you enable a company, let's say GE, for example, and I have no idea if GE uses you. I'm using it because it's a global conglomerate based out of the U.S., but it's all over the world. And you enable them to, for example, we're going to have a project here. We're going to roll out mobile devices, whether it's iPads, whether it's Samsung tablets, whether it's Windows RT, and UA.
And BlackBerry.
BlackBerry.
Yeah, we're a global company, and, you know, the big point, I think, back from what we were just talking about is that, you know, BlackBerry is still a big player in the global multinational space as well, and that's not going to, you know, end anytime soon in my mind, despite the difficulties that they're having. So absolutely, and we've seen pockets of pretty solid success across our member network with BlackBerry, and that will no doubt still continue for the time being.
So, complete sense. And then what you do is you guys take that and you help them deploy this solution all over the world. And, you know, I can speak knowing what we've gone through at my company, that, you know, it can be real difficult to have the same deployment, for example, in Germany, in Singapore, in Japan, in Australia, because, you know, let's take Apple, for example. They don't run the same way in all these places. And we used to have this problem with servers. You know, HP could deliver one way in Israel, could have to deliver a different way in, you know, Lebanon or something else.
Exactly,
and
right.
So why don't you actually talk about what you do? Because it's really interesting to me how successful you guys are in doing what you do.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. I mean, I think it's first of all, we've been going, the Global Enterprise Mobility Alliance has been going for, you know, about 2 years. We've been formalized as an independent joint venture, so a legal entity, literally with almost a year going now. So it's still really early days in the life cycle of the alliance. what it is similar to the airline model. So the Star Alliance, the One World Alliance. These, you know, you as within the airlines, you as an individual, you have a relationship with your local carrier. Okay, your local carrier takes you all over the world through a network of allegiances and alliances that they've made. From a service delivery point of view, to take care of you in terms of where they can, in gaps where they cannot supply you services. So what we find in mobility, and you'll no doubt attest to this, is a couple of things. I mean, first of all, the requirements that enterprises have for mobility, as we all know, have changed quite massively in the last 2 years, right? And those requirements and the end were driven by end users, clearly, okay. And IT have had to, through all the forces of consumerization and other aspects, BYOD, etc., have had to adapt really quickly. And what I saw at IDC as well, is that behind every nascent mobile strategy in an organization, there was always a specialist organization that was either consulting the company in terms of how they build a mobility strategy or how they manage their mobility needs, was either doing some implementation support locally in those countries, or even further down the path, actually doing some managed services. So on some form of recurring revenue stream with that organization, taking care of some aspects of their mobility projects and in terms of management and ongoing support. Okay, so. And that pattern exists all over the world. So whether you're in the U.S., whether you're in Russia, whether you're in the U.K., whether you're in Germany, whether you're in China, there are specialists that are working with these organizations. So what we are doing effectively is bringing these specialists together that operate locally and creating a framework and a platform for them, infrastructure and processes, common MSA, common statement of work, documentation, common SLAs and service level guarantees to deliver holistic services in a local capacity to multinationals. So what does that mean? Well, you're Sanofi, or you're from a pharmaceutical company, another pharmaceutical company, say like Novartis, and your headquarter decision making is in X geography. And you want to do a number of things. You want to deploy, tablets to 20,000 of your workers in 24 countries. Okay, where do you start for that? So what we do is we can help organizations deploy the devices globally in all the geographies that they do. We can locally stage and configure those devices for them. We can handle the logistics and the warranty management of those devices and provide some SLAs around that. And then importantly, beyond that, we can do a lot of the managed services. So the help desk, we can provide local language support across our network of members. We can provide, same day, on-site engineers locally in a lot of the geographies we work with and work within. And most importantly, I think what we also can do is provide that local technical consulting element that occurs, as you do a mobility project. You need to have guys there with you to support you in country, in local language, as you grow your strategy. So, the main source of competition in terms of how you look at it, because it's an interesting market in the global space, but would be, I guess, the equivalent of kind of the carriers or perhaps the global SIs that will have a centralized model and will have to shift guys into geographies.
Well, sort of like,
according to their customer demands.
I would think a competition for you would also be someone like Accenture or something like that, where, we can do a local help desk, we have people who do strategy, we have people who know how to source and everything else. So, but what I find interesting is I don't see a lot of, other than airlines, I don't necessarily see a lot of this. We don't see this really in cloud. We don't see this in some of the other computing areas, networking, et cetera, which is, I think, what makes this interesting. Now, how does one engage with you? Because, you provide these services. Do they come to Gemma? Do they start with your partners and the partners throw them to you? Or, how do I do that as a company?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think it's very simple. I think the common model is, because our differentiation is the fact that we leverage that local
capability. And so the common model is that there's local engagement with our members. So whether our NationSky colleagues in China, whether it's the Vox Mobile colleagues in the U.S., you know, they have relationships. They have go-to-market strategies in their home territories. Oftentimes, they're engaging multinationals, and effectively, the pattern is that their customers start local, and then after a period of time of success, they then ask the member to go global. And in which case, the member uses the alliance for international service delivery. But the model of contracting and interface and management, et cetera, is done in the home country through the local member. And then the other members support that member on those particular projects. So that gives us that local capability. So whether it's in Russia, you know, we don't yet have a Russian member, but, you know, you can imagine there, you know, there will be energy and oil and gas companies Absolutely. That are working globally. They're going to want to work in Russian, but they're going to need international delivery outside of Russia. And that's where we come in, because we have that strength and depth on a global basis. So that's one model. We also we work quite closely with AT&T as partners as well. So we help with AT&T in terms of their international delivery for mobility outside of the U.S. So we do engage on the channel side and that side. And there is a minor portion of activity that we've had in its early days in our history, where depending on the customer actually has asked Gemma collectively to be the main interface. In which case, myself and some of my employees will interface and lead the project, and our members become behind the Gemma front, if you like, and do the delivery.
Yeah, I mean,
but that's very rare because, you know, ultimately the strength of with our members in the local markets that they operate.
Yeah, I mean, I love the model, and, you know, you're starting to see it, and it's kind of interesting, you know, because we're also starting to see apps. They're trying, you know, I could actually see you guys branching out into apps a little bit, because there are apps that say, you know what, I built myself in the U.S. or I built myself here, but, you know, people want to use this app over here, and we don't know how to deliver this service, everything else to it.
Absolutely right. You know, I mean, supporting an app globally. I mean, a lot of these apps are, you know, they're small companies, right? They're based somewhere in California. If you're a bank, you know, pick HSBC, say, for example, and you like this app, but the company's like 30 guys, and they can provide 24/7 support. That's one piece. But what happens if you want it in a local language? You know, you want to run it across 24 countries, but you don't want your entire support, and your bank. And these apps are important applications, a lot of them, right? I mean, we're getting into the phase now, mobile's not just email anymore, right? Some of these apps are being used for really important things in the business. So you want the guarantees of support. So we'll do that. So we'll provide.
So you do that.
We will do that. Yeah. So we can provide through the member network. We can provide app support, you know, on a local basis, on a local language capacity, in a 24/7 follow the sun model. And it's early days. We're seeing RFPs there.
Yep.
We're doing proof of concepts there, but we're not far before companies will say, actually, I'm going to need a service provider to provide me that support for some of these applications that I'm looking at deploying across 30,000 employees. So
now we're running out of time, and I know that, you know, you have a dinner thing, but you have to tell me, you have a minute to hit.
I got a couple minutes. Yeah.
Okay, because I want to hit you with one more theory, because we kind of. I don't know what we were drinking last night, but,
gave me a hard time for leaving.
We touched on a theory last night, because, you know, you mentioned that you worked with AT&T. And, you know, one of the rumors going around now is, you know, with Vodafone having made $135 billion.
Insane, isn't it?
With the divestment of Verizon. You know, there's a rumor going around of what would happen if AT&T and Vodafone ended up together.
Wow, that's a massive deal, isn't it?
But what do you think? I mean,
I think anything's possible. I think, you know,
talking about it last night, you know, the thing that struck me is AT&T thinks of itself as a global company. And I may get in trouble with some of my AT&T listeners here, but it's not.
Yeah.
And, you know, this would give it a huge presence in Europe.
For mobile, you mean?
Yeah, for mobile.
Right.
So, you know, when you start looking at Europe and, you know, the opportunity to say, I have an operator here. You know, you don't have roaming charges anymore. You don't have this other stuff, because we can do this for you now. I mean, I just see huge synergies here, and, you know, and Vodafone's huge too. I mean, Vodafone's got...
Yeah, it's and it's even bigger now with in terms of its value, obviously, with a lot of that cash from coming from Verizon. There's two ways you look at it, right? I mean, there's on one hand, when that the Vodafone-Verizon deal happened, you're thinking, okay, that's a barrier to an AT&T-Vodafone merger massively removed. But on one hand, that's also an impediment because the Vodafone's value is just shot right up, right? So how's AT&T going to fund an acquisition? And I don't know how it balances out between them in terms of
no
size.
Idea myself either.
You know, I mean, it could very well be that Vodafone's actually a magnitude now bigger than AT&T. I honestly don't know.
And we won't debate that because we don't know.
But bringing those two together, I mean, regulatory issues pending, clearly. Yeah. But you're absolutely right. That creates an absolute global behemoth. But I'm wondering if Vodafone would be interested. My view is that Vodafone is going to start to use that cash and start to go on an acquisition spree of its own. And it's going to go in. It's going to go into Africa in a more heavy hitting way, and it's going to go into some of these areas in the emerging areas of the world. Where if you start to look at Vodafone's balance sheet, you're starting to see that its growth is coming clearly from these areas of the world that are just starting to starting to pick up in terms of mobile. And actually, it's having a struggle in certain areas of Europe, in particular, where quarter after quarter they're seeing Spain in particular, just seeing really, really pressure on the revenue. So I think that's where Vodafone will go. But at the same time, it depends on how, aggressive AT&T are.
I kind of think of this, and we didn't get to this part last night. I look at, SoftBank and Sprint. SoftBank and, for those of you that don't know SoftBank, it's a Japanese telco, and I'm going to get his name wrong, but it's Masayoshi-san, is it?
Right.
If I said it wrong, I'm going to apologize now, but very much a forward-thinking head of that company. And the stuff that he's doing with his employees, they've had iPads out for 3 years now. He uses one exclusively. And, he's given one to all his employees. And, they're looking at data and everything else. And, people are kind of going, why Sprint? But... there's no foothold there for Vodafone really outside of Europe. And, I see what you're saying about Africa, but I think a foothold in the U.S., look at it the other way as opposed to AT&T there, Vodafone coming this way.
Right.
Kind of interesting, that gives you...
Absolutely right.
Gives you the power then to go into Latin America and Africa.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And, that's where your growth markets are going to be.
You're right. I mean, I think the initiator of that deal, I guess the point I was trying to make is who is the initiator?
I don't know.
My personal view, it's AT&T, but for where they no doubt have ambition, because I think Vodafone's I think their focus is distracted. I could be wrong. That's my guess.
We'll give you
with visibility of a fingernail on this whole issue.
You've been out of the business for a few for 6 months now, so we have to give you a little bit of a pass, but.
I think that on balance, it's Vodafone's willingness to move in that direction. I'm not sure.
Okay, I gotta let you go. I know you have a dinner meeting you have to get to, but this has been absolutely awesome. So Nick, I want to thank you for taking the time. I know this is the first time you've done one like this, so thank you. I appreciate it. Next time we'll have alcohol with us and make it a little bit more fun. But thank you for taking the time.
No, thanks for having me. It's been wicked. Really enjoyed it. Hope to do it again soon.
We'll find a way to get you back on. And so, this wraps up another episode of the MobileCast. This will be the last one from Atlanta. We'll have a couple coming up from San Diego, actually. The studio is moving around. But again, listeners, you have questions, comments, suggestions, please hit us up on Twitter, email, the webpage. And until next time, have fun.